I know. Big time.
Rumor is that Ayn Rand had a similar setup.
Oh, I read one of her books once, because by book, I'm using, it had words written on pages. It was called Atlas Shrugged, and it was remarkable bollocks.
That's where the retardeds are put to death, right?
Yes. Welcome to the Ayn Rand Appreciation Podcast.
I'm Nate Burgess.
I'm Phil DeLuca.
I'm Sean Watson.
Nate, you started it.
And we are Commanderin.
Yeah! Yeah!
Commanderin!
Yeah!
Thanks for listening. We focus on topics you want to hear about.
Sure we
and
do.
Talk to interesting people along the way. But never, ever talk about three banned topics: religion, politics, Hearthstone. Mm. Find us on pretty much all the social medias by searching for Commanderin MTG Podcast. This episode, we are continuing our Big Mana series with a discussion of the following commanders: Riku of Two Reflections, Melek, is it Paragon? Mizzix, what is this guy?
The Ismagus.
The Ig Madness?
Mizzix of the Ismignus.
Mizzix of the Goblin Wizard guy. And
Gal, it's a lady.
Oh, yeah. Wizard Gal.
Yep.
Enough about Mizzix. Wart the Raid Mother.
Are you saying all goblins
but
look
first,
alike?
No. Not at all. The goblin tokens do.
Oh, that's yeah, that's racist. True.
Yep.
But first, Phil, with the news.
We have some sad community news. Bill Watt of Loading Ready Run has passed away. He apparently was struggling for a long time with Huntington's disease. And when I say we lost a true icon of the community, it's an understatement. It's... I don't know what more to say. It's just kind of sad. And I'm sorry to bring us down. Like, you know, we were laughing before the show and now we were doing, you know, we're going through in really high energy. But it's worth mentioning. And our condolences go out to his family, his friends, his coworkers, everybody at Loading Ready Run. It is a tremendous loss and we're terribly saddened by it.
Yeah, 31 is no age to pass.
No, no, not at all. 31 is so young. Anybody who hasn't gone over to Loading Ready Run, both to watch their videos and just to kind of join their community and hang out, probably should take a look at it. They're funny people. They're they have tremendous hearts. They had this, they still have this kind of stunt where they will stream live an entire week of playing the game Desert Bus. And if you haven't seen Desert Bus, it's mind numbing. And I mean that it was created to be the most realistic game ever. It was in response to all of the problems occurring in the 80s and 90s about, in the 80s, when people were like, video games are evil. So Penn and Teller actually commissioned this game. They put it together. The publisher of the game went out of business, before they could release it, and a few copies got out and somebody discovered it, and then it came to the attention of the folks over at Loading Ready Run, and they decided to do a week of this, basically, for Child's Play, the charity. And the last time they did it, and it became an annual event, and the last time they did it, they raised over $3 million, right? Just
wow.
Them. Yeah, it's insane. It's crazy. But the game... The game is driving a bus. It's a simulation of driving a bus through the desert from Tucson to Las Vegas. Boring.
It's a flat, barren, featureless environment where you occasionally, and I mean maybe once every hour or so, drive past a cactus.
Yeah, and it drifts to the right, so you can't take your hands off the steering wheel. You have to constantly be adjusting it. And it takes 8 hours to drive a bus from Tucson, Arizona to Las Vegas, Nevada. I suppose if one is a Magic player, one can use the opportunity of playing a game with Revised Angel at the end of it. But my goodness, 8 hours is mind-numbing. Here's the best part. If you do drift off and, you know, if you do drift off the road and you've done that because your attention has wandered, a tow truck comes and gets you and tows you all the way back to Tucson, and you get to start over. And Bill was one of the few people, apparently, and he was very proud of this record. He has never crashed the bus, so.
And he is going to be driving that bus in heaven and smiling as he breaks his own record.
No, that's hell.
No, he gets to drive a real bus in heaven.
Oh, yeah.
I've never been to Tucson or Las Vegas. I presume Tucson is an amazing, sparkling place.
There are sparkling surfaces in Tucson. So our condolences to the Loading Ready Run crew and all of Bill's family and friends. It's a tremendous loss. And now, intentionally to kind of pick us up a bit, the Command Zone and the Professor have put together brilliant videos. They're called Kitchen Table Fables, and they take tropes from magic, very short tropes, little instances, if you will, little instance of personality that we all know about, and then expand it into a 90-second video. And it's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. I haven't seen the third one, but I saw the first two, Permission and Flicker. Hysterical. You've
Permission
got to watch this.
Made me cry with
laughter. Yes.
And then when I played Paper Magic yesterday, I was doing the Professor in that and just twitching the two blue all the way through. Yeah.
Yeah. Kudos to each of them. That's Josh Lee Kwai, Jimmy Wong, and of course the Professor, whose name is lost. We don't know what his name is. It's lost to history and time.
Yeah, we do.
Okay, we do.
we know his name, but he's like a demon. If you know his true name, you have power over him. So we don't tell everyone.
That's right. That's right. So yeah, go take a look at that. We'll put a link in the show notes, but you don't really need it. Just search for Kitchen Table Fables and watch them. And if you don't, you only have yourself to blame.
Or do you look on the Command Zone or the Telerian College's YouTube pages?
Yeah.
Channels
and
pages.
Easy to find. You only have yourself to blame if you don't do this, or your parents, because they taught you not to like nice things. So, well, that one fell flat. Sorry, guys. So...
Yeah, Phil.
Yeah. Then one of the things we want... let me just drag... I can't... Oh, I'm on a Surface, and it's the shit for absolute user interface. One of the things we've been mulling over for the last several months is how we can cover our operating costs. We saw a bunch of folks announce their Patreons recently, and so we decided to announce ours. We have a Patreon page. We'll include the links in the show note, and we'll start announcing directly, you know, with what the URL is kind of at the end of our shows. And we hesitated to do it because we know it feels a little weird because we're not doing this to earn any money, right? But we're trying not to go broke doing it. And each of us in various ways, like we've invested a lot into making the podcast as high quality and frequent as it is, and it's a considerable effort. All we're looking to do is cover the operating costs. We'll include some fun thresholds where if we hit a certain threshold per week and stuff, we can actually spend more time doing fun things like more skits. Sean, did we ever put the Garrick interview up? I know we did as a bonus content, didn't we?
Garrick went up on the YouTube. Phil speaking for himself, I'm doing it because I want diamonds and gold-encrusted black lotuses to beat you all to death with.
Mm-hmm.
That's a kind of revenue we're expecting back in off this.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll get all sorts of Power 9 altars. And hold on, there's going to be some noise. Hold on. We need many, many boxes of Modern Masters 2. Although I realize that by shaking it because of the stupid cardboard boxes they put in, they put the booster packs in, I've just ruined a foil Tarmogoyf.
Oh, Phil, that's all right. You've got a pile of them out back, haven't you?
That's true. really, I store them in the trunk. You would call that the boot of my Bentley.
Yeah, yeah, the boot of your Bentley. The trunk of your Bentley, it's not an elephant, Phil. Why would you call it that?
Among other things, you know what we should do, guys, is put a... we should put a threshold up that says we will do a skit called Life of a Podcaster. All right.
Yes. I mean, eventually we'd like to, with this money as well, folks, we've spoken about it briefly before. One day we'd like to do maybe a get together of different podcasts, and like that would involve several people making cross-continental travel, etc. And, you know, we have big dreams and we want to put money towards that. It's not just going into our pockets. It'll be going back into our show to bring you guys better content and cool prizes and stuff like that as well.
And who knows, let's say we hit it really big, that would immediately turn into, you know, preparation for a party for all of our listeners. We can't just spring for a massive party in Las Vegas. although we're extremely grateful they did.
Well, you two were. You know what I did while you were at that party?
We have pictures.
Yep.
Yeah. Go back and listen to like episode 3, guys, if you've not gone back to the archives. Anyway.
And as a side note, I have a glass of water here. I just found a blade in my water. A plastic blade from the propeller drive, right, the screw propeller, that's in my ice maker.
Oh my god, that is a lawsuit.
I'm holding it right now, and it looked like a piece of ice, so as I started sipping from it, I'm like, well, that looks like a weird piece of ice.
My god. You should choke on that and then make millions of dollars, and then we wouldn't need to do a Patreon.
Dude, I don't know if I could fit this in my mouth. I'll have to include a picture. Who knows if this will make it to the show, but I'll have to send you a picture.
Anyway, so that's the idea behind Patreon. I know some of you will think it's terrible, and the simple answer to that is don't contribute to it. We won't hold it against you. Yeah. I listen to lots of podcasts which have Patreons that I don't pay any money to. There are some that I do, you know, so... we won't judge anybody.
We'll accept each other.
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
Well, enough about that. Let's talk about what we've been playing. I'll go first. It's a little out of order because mine is simple. I haven't played in weeks, 2 weeks now.
We'll fix that. We'll fix that tonight.
Yeah, hopefully right after the show we'll be playing. So, what have you been doing, Sean?
I have been doing a deck exchange with a friend of the show, Robin Cass. We're creating a pan-European alliance, and we're currently trading Dimir decks with each other to bounce ideas off each other. So I have been using a rebrewed version of Widwin the Bitingale, which is a very cool black and blue, well, obviously it's black and blue, control deck. And it's been surprisingly effective.
All right.
Nate.
I am about halfway through my second playthrough of Fallout 4.
What commander are you using?
I didn't really figure out how to build settlements well until halfway through the first playthrough and I had already built up half my settlements. Like, my first version of Oberlin Station just looks like this Dr. Seuss tower, and it's just embarrassing. So I started over after finishing the, well, without too much spoiler, finishing the faction quest line that starts with an R, and now I'm going to do it with the one that starts with an M.
I have no idea what you are talking about. I have not played Fallout 4.
That's too bad.
I am happy to say that I have successfully used my son's 11th, my son's 11th birthday as a reason to purchase an Xbox One. And I've already said we have to get Fallout 4 because he's really looking forward to it. And of course, we'll get the Xbox One version of Minecraft. And I know he also wants Star Wars Battlefront, which I'll force myself to play each of those games.
You poor man.
Yeah.
The things
Fallout 4 is, by your definition, not Logan safe.
Yes, I'm fully aware of that. And but one problem at a time, Nate.
listeners, Logan is Phil's son. He's not worried about whether it is safe or not for Wolverine.
Well, Logan safe in the context of media is, I believe, you don't kill any humans.
Uh-huh.
Right. So in Fallout 4, if the question is, do you kill humans, the answer is, oh my goodness, yes.
So you're saying you caused the deaths of a few human characters in that game?
Yeah. And some of them have names.
Some of them have children and wives and husbands.
Yes. So the way I approach most problems is I break them down and solve one bit of it at a time. The first bit was, how do I get an Xbox One?
You take your wife's credit card to the store.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we're going to be doing in the next week or two. And then, of course, you know, how do I get Fallout 4? But that problem is solved pretty much at the same time as the Xbox One. And then it's, how do I justify exposing my children to incredible levels of violence in video games?
So my parents, at the tender age of 8 years old, because I pestered them so much, allowed me to watch the film Aliens. And it turned out fine.
Yeah, what is wrong with you, right?
Exactly. Nothing at all. I don't swear too much. I don't have a general disregard for all of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never, ever played games on the computer where I've killed someone and delivered their severed head to their wife laughing maniacally.
Mm-hmm.
This week. Oh, no, I've done.
This week.
I've done all those things. Damn it.
God.
Oh, what game is that?
Star Wars The Old Republic online. Would you believe it? Yeah.
The online version?
Yeah, it's part of the Bounty Hunter quest line. You kill a guy and well, actually, no, that's not even true. You go up to a guy, you're bounty hunting him. He offers to pay you double what the Hutt are offering you to kill him, to not kill him. So you can kill him, and then after you've done that, you can decide whether you want to deliver his severed head to his wife as a message not to mess with the Hutt. And of course I did it, because Dark Side for life. But
nothing went wrong with your upbringing.
No, and that was just watching Aliens at age 8. So,
yeah. We've already exposed. We learned our lesson the first time. We started watching Walking Dead with the kids, and we knew it was going to be. We knew what it was, right? But we just didn't really think about it. We started watching the show, and now they still have trouble. Logan's 11. Almost 11. He still has trouble going to the bathroom alone. So,
What other nuggets of parenting did you want to do? Hey, kids, I got this film, Solo, 120 Days of Sodom, that you can watch. It looks like a historical documentary.
Yeah. Hey, come on, kids. It's family movie night.
What are we watching tonight? Making a Murderer. Hey, it's educational.
God. Oh, I should mention that if you max out your charisma, there's a perk you can get where you can intimidate humans into not fighting you anymore. So it is theoretically possible to play through Fallout 4 without killing humans, I think.
From the beginning, or do you have to earn that perk?
You can get it pretty early on, and there's enough stuff to do in the first settlement before there's really any conflicts that you can get enough levels to get the perk, I believe.
Welcome to the Vault Podcast, where we discuss...
Wow. Yeah, I know, right? We're actually a Magic the Gathering podcast, aren't we?
We are going to talk about Magic. I've played Fallout 3 once years ago, and that's it. I have no idea anything else about Fallout. I got on Borderlands, and I thought it was a better game.
What convinced me this time was, Nate, when was it you were telling me about the settlement accumulation
Probably
game?
Probably a week ago.
Yeah. And that's what finally I was like, okay, now we really have to, because that's the kind of thing I like to play, even though I'm nowhere near as good as Nate at it. I love to build things like that. So it'll be fun. So thank you, Nate, for the, coming hours and hours of gameplay I'm about to experience, inappropriate or not, with my children.
Yeah, you can do the building while they're around and then send them to bed when you need to do a quest.
Yeah. Oh, it's worth noting the last two games, actually, that Nate got me into were Mass Effect 3 and Minecraft, and I haven't put Minecraft down. I was, in fact, playing last night just before I watched an episode of Jessica Jones with my 8-year-old daughter.
To finalize my thoughts on video games in general, Mass Effect 2... my favorite game of all time.
Hey, listeners, why don't you let us know if you want to hear more about video games? And maybe we'll do an episode similar to the Star Wars episode where it's kind of special. It sits off to the side and we could put it on
Patreon.
Ooh. Oh, well, that's kind of cruel at this point.
That's true. Sorry.
I can tell you how to build settlements.
Yeah. Yeah. That is... I'm sorry, I'm actually thinking about that now, and I didn't mean to sound disinterested with the yeah. Because I'm like, yeah, what? I'm like show planning right now. So
I think if you were going to build a settlement, the best thing to do would be to create land and then copy that land for cheap to build your settlement upon. If only there was a commander that could allow us to do that sort of thing. Smooth.
Brilliant. Although the copying land, I was like, how do you copy land?
Well, that's funny you should ask. I've got some spells that can do that. But anyway, this is not my wheelhouse of a topic, so I will hand you over to Nate Burgessington.
Yeah.
Our main topic is Big Mana, number 3. And we're going to talk about Riku of Two Reflections, Melek, Izzet, Paragon, Mizzix of the Ismagnus, and Wart, the Raid Mother.
Mm.
So all of these commanders, they have red in their casting cost. Some of them have green in their casting cost. Some of them have blue. Riku has all three. And what these commanders do is they take instants and sorceries, and sometimes creatures too, and they copy them or they make them less expensive. Riku and Mizzix effectively make them less expensive. All of them except Mizzix let you copy them on the stack. And what are the implications of that, Phil?
Well, when you copy a spell on the stack, that means that the if there's an X cost, that X is copied as well. Choices you make while it's on the stack, such as whether or not it's overloaded, or if it's a modal spell, so you make two choices out of four, let's say, one of the command cycle, those choices are copied, although you can always retarget it, and it does not include additional costs like Kicker. So beware of that when you're building these. You probably don't want Kicker costs because you're going to have to pay for those. The same is true of buyback. So if you have a lot of buyback spells, you're going to need to pay for that buyback cost.
Yeah, so additional and alternative are the two keywords there, aren't they?
Right.
So additional cost is Kicker and Entwine. An alternative Overload is a very good example, as is Surge.
Yeah, Overload, as alternative costs, those are valid. You can pay the alternative costs for your spell.
Mm-hmm.
Back to Nate.
So we're going to start off, for some reason, with Melek, is it Paragon?
Alphabetical.
Getting rid of the terrible awfulness first, so we can go on to the...
Oh, yeah, alphabetical. That works.
Yeah.
All right, so
that was my
Melek,
OCD
is it Paragon?
Kicking in.
He's 4, a blue and a red. He's a legendary creature. He's weird. He's a weird wizard.
He is.
And he's a 2/4. And he costs 6 mana. Come on. Ugh. You play with the top card of your library revealed. And you may cast the top card of your library if it's an instant or sorcery card.
Mm.
Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery card from your library, has to be from your library, copy it. You may choose new targets for the copy.
Yeah. I can't even look at this card without thinking mediocrity. I realize that there are a lot of Melek players out there, and ultimately he's a combo general. It's a combo general, rather. Not he. I'll try not to say that. It's a combo general, and I don't think that combo actually reflects any real skill. Sometimes if the combo's really convoluted and you have this big Rube Goldberg device, you know, kind of spell sequence, sure. Most of the time when you see Melek, unless you've played against the deck before, just assume it's a Storm deck because that's probably what it's going to be. Because you're casting the spell, it's for free, so you rip it off the top, you have other spells in hand, and then, you know, it just storms away.
To stop Melek, to quote paraphrase Mr. Sheldon Menery from a couple of episodes ago, he's 6 mana to cast. Just kill him a couple of times and he's out of range immediately. So
yeah, and that works as long as your opponent is foolish enough to cast Melek without having, you know, kind of a little cushion of mana with which to cast additional spells, including counter spells to protect
him. Okay. So most count spells are 2 or 3 mana, yeah?
Yeah.
Which means the first time you're casting Melek comfortably, realistically, you're looking at 8 mana before getting your combo commander piece out.
Yeah, I know. I'm not saying it's going to be a quick thing or a sure thing. And in the meantime, you're setting up, ideally, with, you know, the other cards, some of the other cards we'll mention in later on in the show. But so if they don't keep that protective sphere open or are holding a pact of negation or force of will, and I realize
I'm just chuckling at both those cards, sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
Pact and force. Oh wow.
Yeah. I don't think I have a pact. It's $25 now. It went up recently, and but I do have force of will, so but
wow, they're $70 now.
Oh yeah, they're pretty good. I think they
should trade one of them in and get 3 Pact of Negations.
Oh yeah, I should actually. Maybe I will do that.
Yeah. So I listened back to one of our very early episodes. We discussed Melek briefly there, and part of that conversation it was suggested that he might be more playable if he was 2 colorless mana less to cast.
Yeah.
And maybe his ability was more fluid and required less top deck manipulation, but affected sort of all the instants and sorceries in your hand. We discussed that way before, I don't know, let's say Commander 2015 come out. Let's see what they did there.
Yeah, I don't know how you would gather this data, but I would like to see how many Melek players are still playing Melek instead of Mizzix of the Ismagnus.
Oh, yeah.
Who is 2, a blue, and a red.
Oh, that's cool.
Legendary creature. Goblin wizard. He's a 2/2.
She's
a 2/2. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell with converted mana cost greater than the number of experience counters you have, you get an experience counter. Instant and sorcery spells you cast cost 1 colorless, or is that generic?
That's generic.
Colorless.
Generic.
Generic. Cost 1 generic mana less to cast for each experience counter you have.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, so let's hear from the Melek players who've stuck by their old guy and are still running the Melek as the commander instead of Mizzix.
We have a new player in my paper group. He's not new to Magic, but he's new to Commander. And he bought all the precons, and he was using the Mizzix deck. But he was running Melek as the commander. I was just like, mate, just swap it out. And he did, and it immediately was about 10 times better.
Yeah, suddenly he could play the deck.
Yeah. The thing with Mizzix is a time bomb of a card. So Mizzix sits on the table. It gets cast relatively early on, and it wants to use lots of little cheap X counter spells. So a blue normally and X, you know, counter target spell unless its controller pays X, etc. And it gets to a point normally when it's got 7 experience points on it, which is pretty easy to get to if you're running X spells. Because remember, all those X spells always put a counter spell, experience counter on Mizzix. And it just goes boom and it's off. And a skilled player will just win the game from that point. It'll just keep drawing into their hand and deal normally with direct damage, burn effects, kill everyone at the table.
Yeah, I have never... I know this is my own personal problem as a player of Magic the Gathering, but I've never really liked Blue Sun Zenith, right? Even though it's kind of a mana sink, but usually if you do that at the end of your opponent's turn, you get like 2 or 3 cards off it, and you've paid like 6 mana for 2 or 3 cards. And I just think I go back to Brain Geyser and a couple of other cards like that, where the cost per card is a lot lower. But in Mizzix, do I love that Blue Sun Zenith?
Yeah, Blue Sun's an instant.
Yep,
that's why it's better than Brain Geyser. But
but
Mizzix, it's just draw X cards where X is the number of experience counts you've got. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Mizzix is tremendous fun. I think of Mizzix as a combo commander as well. And it can definitely go the same route as Melek and just be so much more effective than Melek. But really, Mizzix is a big X spell commander. And so you're constantly just churning out these spells with X in the casting cost and accumulating experience points. And by the, you know, by turn 7 or turn 8, you know, sorry, by the time the experience counter is at 7 or 8, it is, like you said, it's a magical experience. It just, well, boom, it is, everything explodes.
It is for one player.
Yeah. Well, every player gets to appreciate the magic that Mizzix brings to the table.
As long as the Mizzix player wins at the end of that giant turn, I'm fine with it. It's when they take a half-hour turn and go, yeah, you'll go. And you're like, what? Really? I just watched you do all that and nothing's actually changed on the table.
Yeah, God. Yeah. The X counter spells, that's one. I tend not to play with counter spells because, again...
Do you like having friends?
I do like having friends, right? Because if I'm going to go the counterspell route, I'm going to put a bunch of counterspells in. And so I didn't go there. But you're right. Like, on somebody else's turn, you just counter something just for fun. And for the experience counter, it doesn't even matter if the counter goes off.
No, because you've cast the counter and that's what gives it. It's not resolve, it's cast the spell.
Yeah, yeah. So I will, and, you know, the irony is, of course, by turn 6, 7, 8, you're no longer paying for any generic mana costs in your spells, including overload costs. So you can then take that mana and cast a Melek. And then when your big X spell gets ripped off the top of the deck, now you get to copy these two X's twice, or this massive value of X twice. Yeah. It's wonderful. Yeah. So Melek is great in the 99 of Mizzix, but anybody still running Melek, please, please. We should have a show segment called Melek Aid. Please, listeners, there are still players of Magic the Gathering Commander format.
A donation of $35 will allow us to buy one Mizzix of the Ismagus pre-constructed C15 deck and send it to a Melek player.
Yes. Only with your help.
Carry on.
No, you go.
With your help, we can make subpar Is It Commanders a thing of the past.
Nate, save us, Nate.
Nate, just come in and go, George Bush.
Riku up.
Oh, carry on. Oh,
Riku up. Two reflections.
Oh, Riku. Riku.
He's
Riku,
two,
Riku.
A blue, a red, and a green. He's a legendary creature. Human wizard. We've got three wizards so far.
Hmm.
He's a 2/2. Whatever. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, you may pay a blue and a red. If you do, copy that spell. You may choose new targets for the copy. Also, whenever another non-token creature enters the battlefield under your control, you may pay green and a blue. If you do, put a token that's a copy of that creature onto the battlefield.
This is a stone-cold bomb of a commander.
Yeah, it is.
It is easily one of the best and most thematic on-point commanders ever printed. His abilities are perfect. They're coloured perfectly. He's only a 2/2, so he's not stupid. And you can kill him if he gets down at the right time. He's a sensationally good card. Why have I never built a Riku deck?
Because you have Maelstrom Wanderer.
Yes, because I know why I've not built it. Teema, the wedge in our playgroup, was divided up the commanders between our players, and I got Maelstrom Wanderer. Someone else got Riku, and someone else got Animar.
But you don't regret it.
I don't regret having Maelstrom Wanderer decks. Oh, Riku's just amazing.
Yeah, I was looking through my deck list for Riku, and I was amazed to find it was still in the work in progress state because I've played it several times and it's a nice solid card. But I went through this morning and I was pairing off. I lost a dear friend. And
we need to have a funeral for her.
I put a Seedborn Muse in. Actually, no, I didn't, because the Seedborn was already there. So, but what I did was I added some counterspells, because I started focusing more on the spell aspect, because like most Timmies, I'm a big creature guy.
Yeah.
Endbringer is a good choice for this deck.
Yeah, it really is. Endbringer is an amazing choice for this deck, actually. Endbringer! My local game store is selling Endbringers for 50 pence each. I bought two playsets of them.
You are kidding me.
50p each. I was like, I know it's never going to go up and it probably won't be a big card in standard, but that goes in all sorts of decks.
I'm not sure about that. I think Endbringer has tremendous upside.
Anyway.
I don't mean that in the financial sense. I think Endbringer has... Where did my phone go? I think Endbringer is eventually going to see standard play.
Do you?
Yeah. And modern.
I hope you're right. Yeah, 50 pence each, so 80 cents. 74 cents for Endbringer, sorry. TCG mid.
Oh my god.
Yeah. So in fact, I was overpaying for them at 50p, because that was about 80 cents.
Oh, it's only 6 mana, too, and in this standard environment, that's the equivalent of 4 in the previous ones, right? So you won't see these being 4 ofs, but you're going to see these in some pretty hot standard decks. As a reminder, when you copy that instant or sorcery spell, you copy the X's, you copy the modes, you copy all sorts of fun things. So I strongly suggest, since there are three colors especially, you take a look at the Confluence Cycle that came out in Commander 2015. If you do go for the bigger version of the spells, like Volcanic Offering and stuff, well, we'll get into that, actually. We'll get into that.
We will.
But Riku may choose new targets for the copy.
So, that's right. That's right.
Nate, if I didn't want to play with a wizard, what other commanders are available to me in this theme?
Well, there's a Shaman, which is kind of like a wizard. There's Wart the Raid Mother, who's 4 and some hybrid red-green. 2 red-greens. Legendary creature, Goblin Shaman, 3/3. When Wart the Raid Mother comes into play, put 2, 1/1, red and green Goblin Warrior creature tokens into play. Hey, that's cute. Each red or green instant or sorcery spell you play has Conspire. As you play the spell, you may tap two untapped creatures you control that share a color with the spell. When you do, copy it, and you may choose new targets for the copy.
Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah, that's really good.
Now, there is another wart, isn't there, that is less good.
Yes. You must be very careful when assembling your Wart the Raid Mother deck, and make sure you don't actually order Wart Boggart Ante. She does not have any kind of big mana connotations.
Yeah, if you find it's got black in the mana cost, you've ordered the wrong card. So I'll admit here, hands up, Wart the Raid Mother is a commander that I've had played against me, and I immediately disregarded it and thought, oh, that's shite, isn't it? And it smashed me in the face.
Yeah,
it did.
What's really interesting is she costs the same as Melek in terms of converted mana cost, but I look at her and I see a much more effective card.
It's in green, so that six mana cost is much more achievable.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. I just automatically assume mana ramp in every deck I build. I forget that some decks don't include green.
Some decks are inside the color square, Phil. I know all of yours aren't.
I do love the two pictures, though, because Wart the Raid Mother is in the Shadowmoor version of the world, and Wart Boggart Ante is in the Lorwyn version. And so Wart Boggart Ante has all these, like, she's kind of smiling, even though she has black in it. She's smiling, and she has all these kids that are sort of like bored. And Wart the Raid Mother is full of teeth.
Yeah, and the children are just horrific. Brian Froud style demon things. Ugh.
Yeah. Now, Nate, you've played Wart.
Yeah, I did.
Wart TRM. What's your impression?
Wart Mom. I like Wart Mom. You can go Goblin Tribal, which is something I like to do. Let's see. I guess I can skip ahead a bit to, let's see. So Wart can play slightly bigger converted mana cost spells than Riku because she uses creatures instead of mana to copy the spells. And so Wart Mom decks might be heavier on tokens than Riku due to the way Conspire works. And I suspect that Wart Mom decks have more in common with Ulash the Hateseed than with Riku, partially due to colors, but mainly due to overall deck strategy. And, hey, Donald Miner, is that true?
Yeah, Donald.
Yeah, he has the database for it, but I don't know how to run that query using the current web interface.
If he has a database, he must have $2 million. That's the current price for a database. Yeah.
Well, no, it's to do the research on the database.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah. So you're asking him to do a $2 million job by asking him that question, Nate. Come on.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and speaking of Ulash the Hateseed, we are planning an upcoming series with Big Tokens with friend of the show, Nick Jurgoski.
Big Tokens.
Huge, massive tokens. Pendulous and swinging. I'm looking forward to the Garve Gura Spores episode on that series. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my wheelhouse. Let's get some Abzan in there. So, are there any cards that play well across all of these commanders? Are we disregarding Melek in this conversation? Just looking at Isix, Riku, and Wart.
You can keep them in mind.
But, yeah, in the background, but. Talking commander focus about these cards, we're looking at Mizzix, really, when we're looking at the Izzet side of it.
Well, it works with both. I mean, you can't actually ignore Mizzix. You can't actually ignore Melex.
You can't ignore Mizzix. You
cannot ignore Mizzix. You can't ignore the fact that he has a powerful ability, right? Melex's ability to rip spells off the top of your library is card advantage, and then copying it is just kind of gravy on top of that. And with a lot of the cards we'll talk about, it enhances that. And I can see the appeal of Melek. It's just, I'm gonna pull an example from my past. If you draw 33 cards and can't win, you've just spent a lot of time you've just wasted a lot of time, right? And so that's what guides Melek into a storm strategy, because really, you just got to cast a lot of spells with Melek, and all he's doing is enabling that. So,
woot.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't see a lot of. Anyway.
But if you're considering what is at cards are good, then you might have to consider whether they would be good in Riku as well, because he can do it too.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a real reason that Melek is hovering at about a dollar, whereas, you know, Riku and even Mizzix have gone above that.
So the common color amongst all three of these commanders, three and a half commanders we're talking about, is red. So what are the big red spells we're looking at here?
All right. So yeah, it's worth asking the question, because of this. Does this sort of imply that red is the best color for instants and sorceries? We all think of blue as the best color because it has the card draw. But in terms of game impact, are we actually talking about red?
I think if you're trying to kill someone, flat kill someone without, doing it in a tricksy way, red's your guy, isn't it?
I think
blue kind of requires other shenanigans, while red can just burn you to the face.
Yeah.
Yeah, the archetype in modern, in the other constructed formats, is red deck wins, right?
Yeah.
Because they are generally very fast, they burn through their cards, and that's actually the big weakness of a red deck. If they get to the point where they're out of cards in hand, they've run out of gas. And some of the cards we'll talk about actually kind of work to prevent... and they're cards that are specifically really designed for Commander. Big splashy red spells fall into this category as sort of like ways to get more out of red than direct damage. Volcanic Offering is an example.
I love this card.
Yeah, for 5 mana, 4 and a red, you get an instant, that says destroy target non-basic land you don't control, and target non-basic land of an opponent's choice you don't control. So when you're down to two, let's say it's late game and you're down to two players and you rip this and you manage to get it twice or cast it for only 1 red mana or whatever, right now your opponent has to choose a card he or she controls to destroy. And then the second part of this is...
Well, the thing is, the opponent can choose the same targets that you do.
Yes.
He can, or she can, yeah. Often they won't, though. Often they'll pick, in a multiplayer game, somebody else's, just to be spiteful.
Right. And you can, in politics, as a red player, you should be provoking your opponents to do this to each other. Right? And there are subtle ways you can guide that. I'm not going to go into that now, but there are subtle ways you can guide that choice, where... You get a player, especially if, you know, it's the player you've chosen. So you choose, let's say I choose one of Nate's lands, and Nate is immune to this, of course, but then there's a way to needle Nate or that person into choosing Sean's land.
That Rogue's Passage is going to get really out of hand, isn't it?
Yeah. and then, you know, or you can say, well, you know, are you going to let him get away scot-free? And then they'll choose that. And then the best thing is, if you're doing that to the player on your left, then they will choose the player on your right, let's say in a 3-player game. And then that player on the right will feel vindictive, let's just say, and choose one of the second player's lands instead of doing what's best for everybody and everybody just focus on one land. So... It's pretty effective in a multiplayer, and at worst, you're playing it, you know, each of you is choosing your if you're playing one-on-one, you're choosing your single opponent's land. And then the other bit there is Volcanic Offering. The second part of this is Volcanic Offering deals 7 damage to target creature you don't control, and 7 damage to target creature of an opponent's choice you don't control. So again, oh my goodness, I've actually seen this fire off and hit 6 targets. It's fun.
Wow.
Yeah,
I mean, copy this with Riku. For 7 mana, you're spreading 28 damage around the table and destroying up to 4 non-basic lands.
Yeah. And really, it gets kind of egregious. And by the second time, they're less emotional, or at least more rational. And they'll sometimes, all right, I'm just going to choose the same lands. I know it's hit or miss, and you're giving your opponent a choice, but you can also look at it as a 5-mana destroy target land, destroy target creature, instant spell.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good for red. Comet Storm is, you know, looking at big red damage, direct damage spells. And this works with all of them because they're copying or they're ripping it right off the top. Comet Storm is a great spell for this. And, you know, it's X and red, red with multi-kicker one, so you can kick it any number of times up to, you know, the mana you have, obviously. Choose target creature or player, then choose another target creature or player for each time Comet Storm was kicked. Comet Storm deals X damage to each. Comet Storm deals X damage to each of them.
Love it.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice. Because mid to late game, you have, you know, let's say you only have 7 to 8 mana. This is basically three. I think I just got a knock on my door. This is basically, hold on a second. Right. This is basically, three targets take 5 points of damage, right?
Yeah. In Mizzix as well, this is because if you've got experience counters going, which counts for the X, you can then use your mana that you're not using to cast the spell to multi-kicker it and spread the love around. This is, I mean, it comes in the Mizzix pre-con deck when you buy it. So this is one you should absolutely not cut from that deck. Should be, and your, this is being locked in. And I've seen this end games very quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say if your deck has Mana Echoes in it already, it could probably use a Comet Storm.
Mana Echoes is a dirty card. You and Jaragoski deserve what's coming to you in the afterlife for that card.
Yeah, and other X spells like this are basically all descendants of the two OG cards from Alpha, Fireball and Disintegrate. And Fireball, if you're going this route, Fireball's not a bad card to have, because you can spread it out and kill a bunch of little creatures. It's not as effective as some of the bigger board wipes or even Comet Storm in terms of killing mid-sized to big creatures. Multiple of them, at least. But Fireball is fun. You can split it. You can split it between creatures and players. And then Disintegrate is fun because if you vaporize your target creature, it's actually exiled.
I was just reading the clunky alpha wording on this card. I'm going to read it, listeners, very quickly. So it's red X. Disintegrate does X damage to one target. If target dies this turn, it is removed from the game entirely and cannot be regenerated. Return target to its owner's deck only when the game is over. Wow.
Yeah.
Magic used to be really badly worded.
Well, and remember, these are the days of anti. So if you remove it from the game, you know, it could conceivably be that they can never play that card again.
Ever. It's gone. You might as well put it in the bin or into your opponent's binder.
Oh, yes. Early magic.
You wacky, wacky thing.
So red has some utility spells as well that allow it to kind of recover from its classic weaknesses, right? Generally speaking, with a red deck, you're spending your cards as resources and you're never going to see them again. Volcanic Vision is a card that turns that around, and it works really well if you're already playing other big splashy spells. Volcanic Vision for 5 and red, so 7 mana. This is not a trivial initial spend if you're casting it from your hand. Return target instant or sorcery card from your graveyard to your hand. Volcanic Vision deals damage equal to that card's converted mana cost to each creature your opponents control. Ow. Exile Volcanic Vision. Right. This is lovely. And so you look at something
that's worthy of a Jaleva deck.
Look at that.
Yeah, that's a good card.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, you look at Jaleva, and Jaleva might, if you get unlucky and hit this early, you might only have a 3 CMC or whatever, sorcery or instant. So she's only doing 3 points mid to early game to each creature your opponents control. Mm-hmm. This is not a good spell with X spells, But if you are running already Volcanic Offering, then that's 5 points of damage to each of your opponent's creatures. Yours are untouched. Let's call that out again. Another really good utility spell is Fiery Confluence, just printed in Commander 2015. So for 2 and a red-red, you get to choose 3. You may choose the same mode more than once. It's a sorcery. Fiery Confluence deals 1 damage to each creature. It's all right. Fiery Confluence deals 2 damage to each opponent. It's all right. Destroy target artifact. That too. That's all right. But the flexibility is key. And if you're copying it with a Riku or a Melek, you're getting a tremendous amount of value out of this card. Of course, in Mizzix, you're only paying basically red-red. And in Wart?
With Wart, you'd get 12 damage to each opponent for 4 mana and tap 2 goblins.
Yes. That's very good, still.
Yes, that's right. For 4 mana, you're copying it. She's not making it cheaper. Sorry.
You're thinking of Convoke, which sounds like Inspire, but is green, Phil.
Yeah, and I had scrolled past, so I didn't. you know, green. This is a green card, isn't it? Then another wonderful card with Mizzix in particular is Commune with Lava. Sorry, I felt...
Damn lava hippies.
I felt like I was up in Oregon for a moment. No, that's not fair to Oregonians. For X and red-red, you get an instant. That's very important. Exile the top X cards of your library. Until the end of your next turn, you may play those cards. Mwah.
Mwah.
And again, since you're copying X, if you're playing a Riku or Melek is out because he's not your commander, but he's out, then you're getting twice that number of cards, so you can really dig with this one. And as an instant, you effectively wait until the end of your opponent's turn. You dump this. You dump all your mana into this. And this is one where, especially in red, having another 3 to 6 cards available to you, your hand is temporarily 3 to 6 cards larger. Oh, it's great.
So there's a card that's not on this list here, which is, I'm surprised. If we're looking at red damage, and if you copy it, it's devastating. We've spoken about it before, but Chandra's Ignition.
Oh, yeah.
Chandra's Ignition should absolutely be on this list. It's so good. 3 and 2 red for a sorcery. Target creature you control deals damage equal to its power to each other creature and each opponent. So 2 of them. It wipes the table of creatures often. And it can just spread around a bucket load of damage. And the creature deals the damage. So if you cast this on your commander, it counts as commander damage. Combat. It's not combat. I'm being a spanner. But still, you can get a big creature out, dragons, all sorts of things. Or if you're playing with the blue ones, you can clone something or you can control something with your red and just go boom, 2 of them, wipe everything on the table, do everyone a bucket load of damage for very little. Yeah, Chandra's Ignition should be. I'm struggling. It's becoming one of the cards I put in every red deck.
Yeah. It's quite a good card. Much better than Chandra.
Oh, new Chandra is excellent.
Well, new Chandra, yes, but the Origins Chandra is something to be desired.
Poo. Utter poo.
In the mid-2000s, I think, I'm not sure exactly when, red became the color for rituals, right? So you look at Dark Ritual. Dark Ritual is 1 black, and you put 3 black mana into your mana pool. Not a great commander card, but still one that I've seen used. But in this case, you're looking at, you know, rituals that can be copied, right? And so Desperate Ritual is one of them. For 1 and a red, add 3 red mana to your mana pool. Seething Song is another one. For 2 and a red, add 5 red mana to your mana pool. And then Geosurge is for red, 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 red. So 4 red mana. You can add 7 mana to your mana pool. But you can only use it to cast artifact or creature spells. So if you're heavy on artifacts and creatures, say in a Riku deck, creatures especially, Geosurge is particularly useful to get those cards out of your hand. What I have found, less so with Riku, but with the others, this is true, I end up holding an entire grip full of cards, right? And I look at these wonderful cards that are in my hand, and I'm like, I just can't cast it because I need to rip that off the top of my deck, or I'm like, you know, if it's a creature in Mizzix, I'm only paying mana for spells, and those spells tend to beget other spells. It's kind of fun.
Well, one creature you might want to cast is Priest of Urabrask.
No.
For 2 and a red. Creature human cleric. 2/1. When Priest of Urabrask enters the battlefield, add red to your mana pool. And if Riku copies him, then you get 6 reds.
You have a very tiny hum. Yeah, that's it's true.
It's weird that his mic started humming when he mentioned Phyrexia.
Yeah, isn't it weird?
Yeah. Even in New Phyrexia, red mana sparks glimmers of individualism, passion, and freedom.
Yeah.
Even in New Phyrexia.
See, these are virtues.
Yeah, they are. Especially freedom. And I saw a song by a certain host of The Apprentice about freedom on YouTube the other day that was brilliant.
Are you saying that I should be free to play red Phyrexian cards?
I say you should be free to play all Phyrexian cards and embrace the perfection of Phyrexia, Phil.
You don't really want that.
I do. Come on in. The water's oily.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you don't have to wash it off.
No. Once you've been in it long enough, it becomes part of you. Sorry, it's a really dodgy Wayne's World reference. One person would have laughed at out there. There he is.
So other fancy red spells that we can use, still kind of in the utility category, are one of them is Relentless Assault. For 2 and a red, it's a sorcery. You untap all creatures that attack this turn after this main phase. This is important. I should emphasize this a little bit more. After this main phase, there is an additional combat phase followed by an additional main phase. The reason that's important, and this really only works well if you've got a lot of creatures with vigilance, you actually get the main phase and the combat phases stack, the extra ones stack, sort of like when you cast extra turn spells. I looked the rule up on this to make sure it was right. Those stack. They just keep coming. So if you cast Relentless Assault and then you're somehow able to cast Volcanic Vision and pull this back and smash your opponent's creatures and then cast it again, or you're doubling it and copying it, you get a whole lot of attack steps and main phases. That poor guy in the picture always makes me laugh, too.
He's getting punked.
Quit it.
And so you need to have enough offense to kill everybody basically on the third swing, because once you do something like this, there's no recovery. You are now number one target on the battlefield, so or at the table, since you're not technically on the battlefield.
There's a lot of red effects that do this. The Relentless,
yeah,
World at War, there's a few others.
Yeah, and so you'd have to be playing Jeskai really to take advantage of this and double it and triple it, or some kind of 5-color with Riku as the secret general or something like that. If you wanted to make it easy, I should say, to have vigilance. But there are still red vigilant creatures, and there's potential for abuse. And then another fun one, if you're, you know, this is for the Timmies out there, and this is probably why I thought of it, because being a Timmy, I'll read it in my Timmy voice. Sirkin's Triumph, for 2 and a red, you get an instant. Search your library for a dragon creature card. Reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle your library. Yeah, I know. It's not great because it goes into the hand. But if you're playing a game, if you're playing a Riku deck, and you're like Riku of 2 dragons or...
Riku Dragon Tribal.
Yeah, exactly.
I've seen it.
Because Riku is great for tribal effects, like, you know, that have Enter the Battlefield effects. Or you just want to overpower. You know, I have a couple of dragons as finishers.
If you're doing Riku dragons, Sarkhan Unbroken.
Yeah, Sarkhan Unbroken, right.
The team of commander, he's super dragony, but
super. Yeah.
Super dragony.
But let's say you're not fortunate enough to have that planeswalker, you could probably still have his triumph, because it's only uncommon. And Draconic Tutor is useful.
So you've got a whole mess of dragons. What are you going to do to me with them, Phil?
Well, probably try to eat you alive. Maybe destroy all the creatures you have in play, steal all your artifacts. I don't know, a couple of things.
Yeah, that sounds good. That sounds good. So how would you describe me dying there in that scenario?
Ah, I see. Yes, you would, in that scenario, be suffering a death by dragons. Sorry, death by dragons. For 4 and a red, that's a sorcery. Each player, I love this. I haven't cast this yet, but I really want to. It's the Timmy. They're also getting this card, Death by Dragons. Each player, other than target player, puts a 5/5 red dragon creature token with flying onto the battlefield. I know. It's a double-edged sword, but like, so we're the three of us, let's say we're playing a game, and maybe I'll put the spell in just to be able to do this. You know, we'll cast it. Sean will get a dragon. I'll get a dragon. Nate, how do you like your... Oh.
I do not want to give my opponents dragons.
No, that is true. That is absolutely true. This is for the short-sighted Timmy player who is just like, let's all have dragons. Oh, all except you.
It's the sort of card where I would start debating. If I was casting it, I would sit there and say, see, you, I would give you a dragon, but you really pissed me off. But you can have a dragon, but then again, you're an utter lying bloop. And, you know, it was just going to get personal and insulting, and I'm going to die through my own spell.
Yes. And in this, like, if we're wheeling around the table, I have Nate on my left in this image of us at a table. I have you at my right. And so I would give both me and Nate dragons, so that Nate's dragon could punch over at you for... But knowing Nate, he would just be like, yeah, well, here's your dragon back. Boom. And I'd be like, but Nate, I gave you a dragon. You're just going to kill both of our dragons.
I don't remember where this guy came from.
I see.
I suddenly have a dragon. Hey, where'd you come from?
Where'd this guy know. Come from?
I see you've played against Nate before, Phil.
Yeah, once or twice. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what would be better than giving your opponent one dragon might be giving them two dragons. How could we do that?
No.
Well.
Don't do it.
And this is kind of a short section. There are good artifacts to play in any kind of red-based deck that cares about sorceries and instants. You look at Pyromancer's Goggles from Mythic Rare from Origins. 5.
I like that one.
Generic mana. For a legendary artifact, tap to add red to your mana pool. When that mana is spent to cast a red instant or sorcery spell, copy that spell, and you may choose new targets for the copy. So it has that Riku First ability for tap an artifact. It's pretty good. You know, you look at it, at minimum, it's like you get 2 lightning bolts out of it. I know no one plays... Very few people play Lightning Bolt in this format, but still, if you play something big, like Death by Dragons or Sarkhan's Triumph or even a Desperate Ritual.
Comet Storm.
Holy smokes, especially Comet Storm.
Yes.
Brutal. And if you're playing one of these decks and you don't have Pyromancer's Goggles in it, I would hesitate to say it, but definitely would say you're doing it wrong. You need this spell. You need this card in your deck. Another card that's sort of like gravy on this is Sphinx Bone Wand. For 7 generic mana, you have an artifact. It's from Rise of the Eldrazi. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, you may put a charge counter on Sphinx Bone Wand. If you do, Sphinx Bone Wand deals damage equal to the number of charge counters on it to target creature or player.
Yeah, it's good. Builds up quick.
Yeah, let's just not ask where this bone is coming from in the Sphinx. Whoa! After dark.
I would like to suggest Sphinx Bone Wand is the card whose name sounds most like a 1970s prog rock band.
Yeah.
Coming up on the headline act today, we've got Wishbone Ash, Emerson Lake and Palmer, and Sphinx Bone Wand playing their 50-minute opus all about trolls.
I mean, the art on this is kind of weird, because what is that bone? It's a
leg bone that's been shaped.
Maybe it's a tailbone.
I like the fact that it's got its own custom carry case. The Sphinx Bone Wonder's got its own custom carry case.
Yeah, but you can tell that was not a carry case made by a gamer, because it would have all of those little foam cutouts exactly in the shape. Which we both have.
Yeah, we do. there is a good artifact that only really works for... it works in a few of these that you've missed here, which is...
Stryonic Resonator.
Oh, yeah, I'm making... For me, this was... I just threw a couple of these in here just kind of as examples of cards you want. But by all means, Adam, mention
them. Yeah.
Stryonic Resonator.
I'll read it quickly. It should go in any deck like this. Or any deck where you've got a powerful activated ability. So it's 2 mana for artifact equipment. Whenever an ability of equipped creature is activated, if it isn't a mana ability, that means it produces mana. Copy that ability. You may choose new targets for that copy, and the equip cost is 3. So, that makes... Put that on Riku, for example, and you get to copy. So you get 3 copies of everything when you cast one spell and pay an additional 2.
Do these commanders have triggered abilities?
Riku's isn't...
Oh, they are. They're triggered abilities. That's right. Yep. So in that case, you use Stryonic Resonator for the same effect.
Oh, yeah. Same effect with Stryonic Resonator. Are they all triggered? Is Warp's not a activated?
Yeah, because it
conspire
says whenever. It says whenever you cast
a
spell.
Whenever,
you
yeah, okay. All right, sorry. Scrap everything I just said and replace it with Stryonic Resonator, which is the same mana cost.
That's great. So what we'll do in the edit is we'll take Nate saying Stryonic Resonator just then.
That's funny.
And Nate said something early on. He's right. This is the tailbone, like the last tailbone of a Sphinx, because they have those fancy tails.
Those fancy pants tails that they have on Esper. Which is weird. It's a very red is it type card, Sphinx Bone Wand, but the Sphinxes are an Esper tribe. Oh, they're saying that we've had a couple of is it Sphinxes lately, haven't we? The Arjun, or whatever he's called.
Yeah.
Meh.
Yeah, anyway. Arjun's only good for basically cycling through your deck.
He's good in Niv-Mizzet. He goes in the 99 of Niv-Mizzet. Good cards for the individual commanders.
Yeah, and since, you know, we listed them alphabetically, let's look at good cards for Melek first.
So, moving on. I'm joking.
So, Melek really cares about what's on the top of his deck. So, of course, you're going to have a lot of top deck manipulators in this. So, you're really kind of looking at Miri's Guile, Sylvan Library... right. This isn't green. Repeat that. This isn't green.
You can buy super cheap budget cards like Sensei's Divining Top and Scroll Rack.
Yeah, those are included because they're kind of classics. And if you're doing this and you've been playing for a while, maybe you have one or two of these cards. But on a budget, you do not have Sensei's Divining Top or Scroll Rack. But Scry is plentiful. And... that's cards like Crystal Ball.
Thassa.
I was going to say Thassa. But Thassa, right. Thassa's blue. It works in Izzet decks.
Yeah.
So really, anything with Scry.
Can I, if we're talking Scry quickly, just give a little tip my hat to the ultimate Scry card, Sigild Starfish.
Yeah, that's a good one, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you're doing... for whatever reason, if you have a significant number of planeswalkers, then you can use the new Oath of Jace.
I don't know why you would, but sure.
And also the new Hedron Alignment, I think it's called, right? That weird card that with the alt victory condition. It's kind of like a redundant Thassa, but still useful.
I'll say that in Jaleva, I've been moving away from top deck manipulation and scrying, because it's more fun to have more bombs and see what you get.
Random death is more fun than planned small death.
Yeah.
He's not wrong. Spirit of the game right there.
Yeah. But we are talking about Melek, and Melek needs all the help it can get. I mean, it's no Jaleva. Anybody, I I have seen Jaleva versus Melek. It's short work, let's just put it that way.
Oh, the Jaleva deck thinks it's Christmas every time someone plays with Melek.
Yes.
Hey, your deck's going to be full of really great cards for me to cast. Yay. And you're putting them on top of your deck so I can see which ones I can get. Oh. Even better.
Oh, it's a shopping display.
Yeah. So I think we should move on from Melek because he is
bloop.
Well, we have aww, one more that relates to top deck manipulators, and this is one Nate put in. So, Nate.
So as a edge case, top deck manipulators, if you're going that way, those decks might be better at managing the timing of drawing your miracle cards, like Bonfire of the Damned. XX in a red sorcery. Bonfire of the Damned deals X damage to target player and each creature he controls, but it has a miracle cost of just X in a red.
Yeah.
Teehee. Yeah, again, great in a Mizzix deck as well. So if you're manipulating the top of your Mizzix deck, let's say, I would say that's a far more effective strategy than saddling yourself with Melek, but
yeah,
this works well in Melek. My kids gave me a Girl Scout cookie. That was the interruption before.
I've never had a Girl Scout cookie. What? What is a thin mint? Because I love minty things and I like cookies, so I'm excited.
All right, gird yourself. A thin mint is a, as advertised, kind of a thin cookie, or I guess you call them biscuits, which is an abomination
before
God.
Yeah, a cookie is specifically something with chocolate chips in this country.
Got it. Okay, so imagine that form factor. and without chocolate chips, but the entire thing is chocolate dough, crisp, and with a minty taste to it, only coated with a thin layer of chocolate. And then you take 7 to 10 of them and jam them in your mouth all at one time and chew. And it makes for a very, very dry mouth, but my mouth is watering right now just thinking about it.
I want some thin mints.
Well, if you can get out here before our supply goes away.
By Thursday this week.
Because Girl Scout cookies, for everybody out there who don't live in America necessarily and haven't had the fortune of being here during this wonderful, wonderful season called Girl Scout cookie season, they only come out about now, and that's it for the year.
Phil,
so you have to actually stock up on these if you want them to last through the year.
Phil, I want you to save me one singular thin mint.
Absolutely. We will do at least one singular thin mint, and I might have to run downstairs.
Kids, stop.
Well, my daughter is a Girl Scout, so she sells these. So my wife today went, bless her heart, because I should have been there and I wasn't. She went and she picked up hundreds of boxes of Girl Scout cookies. And I sold a bunch at work, and so we'll have a few extra because we always get a few extra because people are like, oh, I wish I had Thin Mints. And then we hand them, you know, we sell them a box of Thin Mints. So I'll try to reserve a box. Here's something else amazing. This has everything to do with Magic the Gathering, and when I say it, you'll understand. Somebody at work told me, she was like, yeah, my daughter used to sell Girl Scout cookies. And so, yeah, it's not just about the cookies. It's about all the interesting things you can do with them. And I'm like, really? And she goes, yeah, you know, like thin mints. And she's ordering 9 boxes of cookies from me, right? And she goes, yeah, you take the thin mints and you freeze them. I'm like, yeah, everybody does that. Or not, you know, like, of course, you put them in the freezer because when they're cold, Sean. Oh, my God.
Cold. Oh, well, the chocolate will go hard.
Oh, yeah.
God.
Oh, if I spit, it's a good thing I have a spit guard on this mic. Let's just put it that way. But my poor surface over here is getting wet. She said, you take vanilla ice cream, put it in a blender with some thin mints, and then blend it and have a thin mint vanilla shake. And I was like, oh my God, my mind has just exploded. I had never heard of that before. I realized, like, you guys are like, whatever. And I'm like, no, I've got to try this. Just as I've gone on a low-carb diet, too.
So. I'm going back on my dying this week. Anyway, magic.
If I were truly clever, I would have related this to the spell Mind Bomb or something like that, but I didn't.
Okay, so Mizzix.
Yeah. So this I'm going to turn over to Nate and you and Nate because I think you guys have done the most for this next section.
As an Animar player, I'll say that Mizzix has an Animar-like mana evaluation of the cards that you want to use. So the higher percentage of the mana cost being generic mana, the better discount your commander gives you.
Yeah, I mean, and if you're playing it right, every Mizzix spell acts kind of like a colorless Eldrazi spell. Right, in Animar, because you're basically only paying the colored mana cost of each spell you cast with Mizzix.
Because the colorless element is free most
right.
of the time.
Or the, more accurately, the generic mana.
Sorry, yeah.
Yeah. And early on, you're paying for a couple of those, but once it gets rolling, really when it gets to like two or three experience counters on Mizzix, it just doesn't stop. And it accelerates, and then every spell you cast is... You know, let's say late game, you can do two fireball spells or a fireball, a disintegrate, a comet storm, a bonfire of the damned for just, yeah, you can do them all. And each one of them increases the experience counter. So the last one of those is probably like 10 points of damage, which is why we were saying, like, when you go off with Mizzix, you're blowing out the entire table.
But at the higher end, you do need to use X spells in order to get more counters.
Right. Right.
Yeah, so cheap things like Brainstorm, Preordain, Ponder are some of the good non-X spells you need to get your hand rolling early on. So one to cast, just sort of card draw, hand filter effects. Can I suggest that Time Reversal, Time Spiral, Days Undoing, that sort of thing are good? Because I've seen Mizzix decks stall because someone's put in a well-placed counter at the right time or stalled the Mizzix ball rolling, and it needs a way of reloading. So, the three I would suggest is Time Reversal, Time Spiral, or Day's Undoing.
Those are all great cards. My solution to that in my Mizzix deck is a lot of the low CMC non-X spells are cantrips. So they just replace themselves and they build up the experience counters in those first couple of critical early turns. And then the X spells take over from there. And that's where, again, you know, first time I ever cast Blue Sun Zenith was actually in a Mizzix deck. And even if you're, quote-unquote, only casting it for the experience counters as X, it's lovely.
Blue Sun Zenith's a good card, Phil. You're doing it a disservice by saying it's only good in Mizzix.
Oh, I'm not saying it's only good. I'm saying I have had trouble using it. Because that third blue mana cost for me has always been prohibitive because I really like green.
Phil, stop
I like multicolored decks.
Stop doing blue wrong.
I admit it. I do it wrong. And now without profit, I have almost no incentive to play blue in my decks.
I mean, you're talking to a man that has put Phyrexian Obliterator into an Esper deck once, which is four black into a three-colored deck, and you can achieve it. This myth that if it's got more than two colored pips in it, it becomes really hard to cast. You're just building your decks wrong, people.
I believe it, and I accept that. That is a valid criticism. Also, black is a lot easier to cast multiple pips of because of Urborg.
Because black is da bomb, as they say.
Well, when you have Tomb of Yawgmoth out, then a Phyrexian Obliterator, it's easy. Sorin's easy to cast, right?
So you're telling me, Phil, you would cast a Phyrexian Obliterator if you had a Urborg out?
Oh, I'm saying that if I really needed the crutch, I would probably play a Phyrexian Obliterator. No, Obliterator is a beautiful card.
I love Obliterator.
With the exception of the Phyrexian part of it. And it reflects, like, you look at Phyrexian Obliterator and it contains everything I despise about Phyrexian cards, right? They are so powerful in proportion to their mana cost and in proportion to what everybody else, like what all the other cards get. And I just look at it as, you know, despite its despicable nature and the morality of the players, yada, 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 which are all very important. It's like, yeah, I could cast a Phyrexian Obliterator. I can cast an Elesh Norn. But where's the challenge in that?
Well, Phyrexian Obliterate is not an obvious card. It stops people attacking into you. So how is it different to Ghostly Prison?
So you think Phyrexians are easy mode?
Phyrexians are definitely a notch. They definitely turn the dial down a little bit in terms of difficulty to play these cards. Yeah.
It's weird because that's how I feel about the color green. Not because of the whole spectrum, but because of the fact it ramps so hard, it makes everything else you've got so much easier to play. And that's why I do run green. I'm not as hardline about it as you are with... And I have several green decks, and I use powerful ramp spells, so I'm a hypocrite, if nothing. But that is how I feel about it. As soon as I see a deck has a heavy green element in it, I'm like, okay, it's commander on easy mode. But I know people that would say exactly the same about blue, and I know people that say exactly the same about, you know, no one would say about white or red, but black.
And we have access to all of the cards in Magic history for the most part, right?
Mm-hmm.
And even Mark Rosewater in one of his latest podcasts said, you know, they found that they were putting a lot of instants into blue, but that just made it really easy to play. And because there were no hard choices, it was his podcast on choice, which if you have any pretensions of being a game designer or just like game design, you should listen to. It's fantastic. But he said they started putting some more sorceries into blue because now all of a sudden the player had a choice. Do I wait until the end of the turn, like end of my opponent's turn to use this mana? Or do I go ahead and cast the sorcery spell that gives me a bunch of cards? And so I think that there's something to that blue is kind of playing on easy mode. And I'm not saying there isn't strategy to it, but it's easier to play blue than it is to play green.
But green makes every other color easier to play because it just gives you land.
Well, sure, it gives you the land, but it doesn't take away the choice. Whereas blue instants, which we all want to use because we're all like, Blue Sun Zenith, oh my God, Phil, why aren't you using that, right? And even I'm saying that because it's like, oh yeah, you just wait until the end of your opponent's turn, you dump it, you dump your mana into it, you get whatever card you can, shuffle it back into your library, and we'll see you again later, Blue Sun Zenith, right? That's definitely easier than putting some land into play tapped or untapped and casting a like deciding whether or not to cast a big creature or hold back for an Unravel the Aether, right?
How many times have you someone gone ramp, 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 dump a load of tokens? Oh, look, there's a Beastmaster Ascension or a Crate of Behemoth for some Triumph of the Hordes, or and you're just like, yeah, okay, fine.
But those all require setup and require choices to be made in order to
so
get to that point.
So does all of the Phyrexian cards.
Hmm.
With the exception, ironically, of Vorinclex, who is green.
Well, speaking of blue and green easy mode commanders, what are some good cards for Riku of Two Reflections? I'm gonna go off on my own little tangent here and shout out Bio Visionary.
You beat me with this.
He's one, a green and a blue. This guy's hilarious. Creature Human Wizard, 2/3. At the beginning of the end step, if you control four or more creatures named Biovisionary, you win the game. So I took Riku of Two Reflections, and this Biovisionary is the hidden commander because there are so many things in blue that will clone or copy whatever you got. And Riku will copy those things. So you get Riku out, you play Biovisionary, you copy him, then you play a clone. Then you copy the clone. Hey, I have four Biovisionaries. Where's the instant removal, guys? Huh?
Yeah.
And then you laugh and win, and then everyone says, okay, you win. We're going to play for a second. Which is acceptable. That's understandable.
Yeah. And that's when the surprise route kind of ruins your day, though, doesn't it?
It happens in the end step, though. It's not like it's next upkeep, which is what makes it really nasty.
Yeah.
If you're into your alternative wacky win conditions like this, Felidar Sovereign, Lab Maniac, this is right up there as a good one, if that's what you like to do.
It's good for a laugh. Yeah.
I think if it was your only commander deck and this was the only way it was going to win, you're probably not going to have a lot of fun for long. For a while, you will. But
And the name of your deck is Riku of Four Biovisionaries, right?
Yes.
That's great. What other cards do we have?
So one good thing Riku is good at is taking extra turns. Now, we kind of have a rule in our playgroup where it's sort of frowned upon to take more than one additional turn. So copying them, check with your playgroup what kind of playgroup it is, but pick any additional turn spell, the king being time stretch because it allows a player to take two additional turns. And you can take multiple additional turns and you should be able to win after that. Won't discuss it too much because it's kind of boring. What was more interesting is Listener Pete, who is a player in my paper meta, has played with a Riku deck for a long time. So I asked him just to name me a few of his favourite cards and sort of what he's thought are champions of his deck over the years he's been playing with it. And he listed me four cards. One is an enchantment, so you can't copy this, but it gasses the deck, which is Teemer Ascendancy, which is green, a blue, and a red. Creatures you control have haste. Riku's going to be producing a lot of creatures. When a creature with power 4 or greater enters the battlefield under your control, you may draw a card, which is often two creatures entering the battlefield with power 4 or greater under your control. It's a fantastic card. Diluvian Primordial, so a 5/5 flying blue creature for 7 mana, and when it enters the battlefield, you cast an instant or sorcery from each of your opponent's graveyards. So if you cast two of them, that's two instants or sorceries from each of your opponent's graveyards. Yep. Molten Primordial. He's in the Primordial cycle. You can't play the green one because he's banned. But the Molten Primordial, which is the 5/2 red for haste, a 6/4. When he comes into play, you gain control of one creature of each of your opponents, and it untaps and gains haste until the end of turn. And of course, if you put two of them into play, that's six creatures you're taking. That's almost an insurrection with 2 6/4 hastes with them. And one that seems not that great, but when you use it becomes really offensive, Inferno Titan. So red Titan from the Titan cycle, it's 4/2 red. For a creature giant, that's a 6/6, as are all the Titans. You can pay one red, and he gains +1/+0 until end of turn. And when it enters the battlefield or attacks, he deals 3 damage divided amongst 1, 2, or 3 target creatures and or players. So he does 3 damage you can spread around. So that's 6 damage you can spread around, and then you can start attacking, and it starts to add up, trust me. How much would you pay for all four of those cards, guys, in total?
Well, I might pay $10.
$10? Nate?
I would only be willing to pay $2.03.
Oh, Nate, you're out of luck. Because at time of recording, these cards, all four of them, will set you back a whopping $2.04.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So close.
That's funny. Inferno Titan, I just looked at my deck list for Riku. I don't have Inferno Titan in there or Molten Primordial, and I should. And I found the replacement, which is Goblin Marshall. Sorry.
So, yeah, I mean, when Pete built his Riku deck, he went more for the creature-heavy approach rather than the instant sorcery. It does have instant sorceries in it because it's a teamer deck. So he's running if you wanted to do like the Biovisionary deck, but someone exiled your Biovisionary or something, a lot of clones work in the deck super well because you get two clones. So whatever your opponents are holding, you get two copies of as well. So
it
starts to get really powerful when you're casting clones. So clone, Clever Imposter, Phyrexian Metamorph, Progenitor Mimic, which is a really, really good clone, that's a Simic clone, and Gigantoplasm is a really good new one as well. And they're all super.
Dax Duplicate,
which is a clone with haste and dethrone. Everyone loves that. But so yeah, that's it for Riku, really. Just pick all your favorite, really good end of the battlefield triggers in the team of colors and go, go, go.
Yeah, you can go in a lot of directions with Riku. He opens up the strategy to lots of possibilities.
I really like powerful commanders that have more than one way to build them.
Yeah, the direction I went was actually tokens, which is why Goblin Marshall is in there. But I'm starting to think that the impact of even 4/1/1 red goblin creature tokens may be a little bit less than I had anticipated.
Less than 2 Molten Primordials with the 6 threat-affected creatures.
Yeah.
That can end a game, that Molten Primordial, in a Riku deck. Someone's playing a couple of Eldrazi. I'll take
goodbye,
those.
Goblin Marshall.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Well, speaking of commanders who would maybe like a bunch of goblins, how about Wart the Raid Mother? Now, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Wart the Raid Mother probably would like to use a token strategy, and maybe with goblins, but doesn't have to be, because green gives a lot of options there. First card I'll talk about is a Planeswalker, Xenagos, the Reveler. 2, red, green. If you plus 1, add X mana in any combination of red and or green to your mana pool, where X is the number of creatures you control. So that's a Gaia's Cradle right there for plus 1.
It is.
For 0.
It's better than a Gaia's Cradle because it gives you red or green.
Yeah. In your choice of colors. Yeah. For 0 loyalty, put a 2/2 red and green satyr creature token with haste onto the battlefield. So you can tap him for either red or green conspire abilities. And for the minus 6, exile the top 7 cards of your library. You may put any number of creature cards and or land cards from among them onto the battlefield. So it's like a kind of like a little Genesis Wave.
Yes. Sprouting Wave.
And if you can get that ultimate off, if you're in green, you're probably playing with Doubling Season.
Yeah, the only reason Doubling Season isn't used more is it's so damn expensive.
It's so expensive, right. Yeah, the only reason I have one is because I got one when it was $15, which is still a lot of money.
I traded in a bunch of stuff. Like, I had 4 Mox Diamonds, and I picked one up then when I traded all my sort of multiples of expensive cards that aren't great in Commander.
Yeah. So what else do we have there for Wart?
For some red and green creatures who make tokens, there's Dragon Lair Spider. 2 red, red, green, green. Creature Spider, 5/6 with reach. That's pretty
cool.
Whenever an opponent casts a spell, put a 1/1 green insect creature token onto the battlefield.
Whoa. Even if you're trying to remove Dragonlair Spider, I mean, at least what she presumably is a mother, what she'll do is she'll give you a green insect creature in return for your opponent removing her.
I might put this into my Maelstrom Wanderer deck instead of the Prophet of Crucifix that's obviously just been cut.
She's expensive, though. She's $4? Popular.
$4. That's all right.
Listen, there's $4?
$4 pounds.
$4. Yeah. Well, it's that or...
That or my son gets to eat this week and he wants me to have a Dragon Lair Spider.
So, Lord.
What kind of... if the Dragon Lair Spider obviously lives in a dragon's lair, what else lives in that dragon's lair?
Oh, maybe a Dragon Broodmother. For 2, red, 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 and green. Creature Dragon, 4/4 with flying. At the beginning of each upkeep, put a 1/1 red and green dragon creature token with flying and devour 2 into play.
Very nice. Very nice. And getting expensive. That's nearly a $15 card.
Yeah, that one.
Yikes.
That one's jumped. But it's funny to think of these two as being like the 6 CMC broodmother sisters or whatever.
And I've noticed with the Wart the Raid Mother deck, you're having a motherhood theme going on there. You've got the spider protecting the nest. You've got the dragon brood mother to go with Wart the Raid Mother.
Yeah, I was actually looking up other mother cards to make a theme deck. You could go with Jund because you add Sakiko, Mother of Summer, Phyrexian Vat Mother, Grandmother Sengir. And if you want to go out on a limb, there's Smothering Abomination.
I can't believe you did that off the top of your head.
Mm.
That's awesome.
Sheldon Menery, if you're listening, we're sorry about that pun.
No, we're not.
I'm enjoying that. It's going to keep me tickled for a week, that.
Yeah, that one's good. And you'll hear it again. So are there any other cards that Wart wants to use?
Yeah, if you're using goblins and to tap them and conspire things, hey, why not get twice as many goblins when you cast your goblin token sorceries? So if you've made a Krenko deck, you probably know about Dragon Fodder, Krenko's Command, and Hordling Outburst. And all three of those cards are the most efficient of that effect. They cost one mana per one goblin. There's some other cards that cost a little bit higher. Empty the Warrens might be situationally better for Mizzix because it has Storm. I don't know if you want to make a Goblin Tribal Mizzix deck. That kind of seems weird to me.
Yeah, that's only if you're throwing Zada in there to kind of boost that as a secret commander.
Yeah,
that could work.
Yeah, that could be a thing.
What about good cards for Riku and Wart?
There's a few.
Yeah, we're going less blue and more green now. So we know about the creatures that bring in a bunch of other token creatures when they show up. Avenger of Zendikar, Hornet Queen, and if you're going Goblin Tribal, Beetleback Chief and Siege Gang Commander. And there's also Mog War Marshal is efficient.
Yep.
If you want to double your mass tokens, there's Sapperling Symbiosis for 3 and a green, sorcery. It's got Flash Kick 2, and that's a new keyword I made up. You may play Sapperling Symbiosis anytime you may play an instant if you pay 2 more to play it. So it's a kicker that gives you flash like the Rockettes. And you put a 1/1 green Sapperling creature token into play for each other creature you control.
Very nice.
So if you double that, then you get 4 times as many creatures.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. You've got Arachnogenesis here, Arachnogenesis here, which is a card that got me the other day. It's really powerful.
And you could have twice as many spiders instead.
That was one of the cards I tuned into Riku, because I was trying to make it more of a sorcery instant focus. And Arachnogenesis, I was like, what? This is perfect for it.
Yeah, Arachnogenesis is brilliant.
The phrase, not the card, eaten by spiders comes to mind.
Death by dragons, eaten by spiders. Mm-hmm. Whatever happens, it's going to hurt.
All right. What else do we have there? Is that Parallel Evolution I see? Why don't you talk about that, Nate?
For 3 and green sorcery. For each creature token in play, so it affects other players too, but it only affects their tokens. Its controller puts a creature token into play that's a copy of that creature.
Hmm.
And it's got flashback for 4 green.
And of course you're copying it, and so this is another great way to double your creature tokens. Wow. Wow, I'm doing this wrong.
This is written down here, and it makes me smile every time I see these two words together. Clone Legion.
Yeah, that's quite good.
It's so hard to pull off, but...
Yeah, it's got a big mana cost, Riku would need to save 2 more to double it.
I think it's a perfect commander card, because it's stupidly expensive to cast, very situational, but when it does work, it puts a big old smile on your face, and nobody minds dying to a Clone Legion, do they? If you're the sort of person that is going to get humpy about having everything on someone's table cloned and swinging over and killing you, it's probably not the right format for you. But Clone Legion's so good. And 2 Clone Legions? Wowzers.
Yeah, that's awesome. Even though we're only talking about high mana, the availability of a lot of mana, that's almost magical Christmas land.
Yep. It's good, though. If it's in someone's graveyard, I can memory plunder it.
Hmm. Hey, now.
Now, this is an interesting inclusion, Nate. How is this working with Riku?
With Flame Shadow Conjuring. It's an enchantment for 3 and a red. Whenever a non-token creature enters the battlefield under your control, you may pay red. If you do, put a token onto the battlefield that's a copy of that creature. That token gains haste. Exile it at the beginning of the next end step. So it's doing what Riku's doing for half the mana for a turn.
Yeah, that's quite good.
So in Origins, there was a cycle of cards that were like old super powerful cards from the past that toned down a bit. So Dark Petition was like a toned down Demonic Tutor. This was a toned down Sneak Attack.
A Sneak Attack? No, Splinter Twin.
This is Sneak Attack, isn't it?
Pay one. No, Sneak Attack pulls cards from your hand, puts them into play for a turn.
Yeah, so this is a toned down version of it. So you have to cast the card, then get an extra one that then fires off in Sneak Attack style. Splinter Twin's an aura.
Yeah, that's why this is more like Splinter Twin. Because Splinter Twin is put a token that's a copy of this creature onto the battlefield. That token has haste, exile it at the beginning of the next end step. So it's basically the same, except you're not tapping the creature, you're paying an extra red. And it's when the creature enters the battlefield as opposed to forever!
Forever.
Like Deceiver Exarch and Zealous Conscripts and whatnot.
Weird, actually. Splinter Twin's just taking a real hit in price. Weird, that. Hmm. Yeah.
Strange. Yeah, I suppose we'll be seeing Splinter Twin in more Commander decks.
It's an aura. No one's going to play with it unless it's a dedicated aura deck.
Who plays with auras?
Just get Kiki Jiki instead.
All right, keep going, Nate.
Okay. Hey, do you like playing Hull Breach?
I do.
Do you like playing Decimate?
I do.
Do you like playing Artifact Mutation?
I do.
Do you want to play a twice?
I do.
Do you want two Decimates so you can destroy eight things?
I'd be impressed if you've got enough targets of the right types to get two Decimates, but it would be wonderful.
Yeah, it's tricky, but yeah, Wart and Riku can double your targeted removal spells, the nice ones, and then you can't have nice things because I removed them twice.
Yeah, double Hull Breach is one that's got me before. Double Artifact Mutations, awesome. Get a ton of tokens as well. Yeah, it's very good.
A couple more cards I don't think we've talked about before. Muanvuli Acid Moss. For two green,
this
sorcery,
is a great card.
Destroy target land, and search your library for a forest card, and put that card into play.
Why
tapped.
Do people not play that card? That's a brilliant card.
Oh, I play it. I play it in almost every green deck I have.
Just never draw it.
Ooh.
No, I haven't been playing a lot of green decks recently. Like dedicated green decks.
Well, you've not been playing a lot of decks recently, to be fair.
Well, yeah, there is that.
So you can destroy a land and get a forest, or you can destroy two lands and get two forests.
I mean, in terms of value, and in particular, think of this in this color, you're getting, like, split it down the middle. You're getting a land for one and a green, which isn't quite a bargain, but then you're destroying a land for one and a green, and that is, that absolutely is. Green has not ever been efficient on land destruction. And so you get to shoot somebody's pain in the butt land and get one? Yes, please. Double it, too. I'll take two.
I don't know this next card, either.
Yeah, if you think that's a bargain and you still think it's a bargain for one more mana, there's Frenzied Tilling, which is three in red-green. Does the same thing, except you need to get a basic land card instead of a forest.
Hmm, very nice.
Yeah, so it opens it up a little bit. For me, though, again, I'm lucky enough to have original duels and the Ravnican dual lands as well. So for me, a forest is basically two colors.
That could be anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So everyone knows Cultivate and Kadama's Reach, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
They're the functional reprints. Get two basic lands out of your deck, one into your hand and one onto the battlefield tapped. They're excellent if you duplicate them. But arguably a better card if you create two of it, which is one listener Pete turned me on to, is Skyshroud Claim. So three and a green to search your library for up to two forest cards, not basic forests, forest cards, put them onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. So not tapped. So in Riku or Wart, that essentially says pay six and put four untapped lands, forest lands, onto the battlefield.
Yeah, it's amazing. That's amazing. The because again, it's forest. It's not a basic land. It's a forest card. And what's the other one? Explosive Growth.
Explosive Vegetation.
Explosive Vegetation, yeah. That goes and gets two basic lands, puts them into play tapped, and Skyshroud Claim is, in my opinion, and given my card set, a better card. And oh. I remember first time I saw it, some kid was playing it, and I was like, what is that? Because I needed that, and I got it.
So if you duplicate the Skyshroud Claim in a Riku deck, you can go get... the Battle for Zendikar dual land. If you're lucky enough, you can get two dual lands from the original Magic, if you own them. And you can also get your Ravnica. You can get four dual lands off of a double Skyshroud Claim if you are lucky enough to own all them cards. So, yeah, awesome.
And in the specific deck we're talking about, I'm running six fetchable dual lands.
Mm-hmm.
And four of them are solid forests, so... What the hell? I don't run the have lands, right? Or whatever we're going to end up calling the ones from Battle for Zendikar. I just don't... I'm hung up on it. Because if you draw it, it's just a Guildgate.
It's not necessarily a Guildgate, though, is it? Because let's say your opening hand has a couple of basic lands in it. You just don't drop it until your third land drop anyway.
Oh, sure. No, I get that. But, you know, you look at a typical Riku deck or any kind of commander deck that has three colors, and you're not running a lot of basic lands, which, of course, is the great weakness of this format, because, you know, one Bane of Progress or...
Wave of Vitriol.
Wave of Vitriol. Right, that's the one I'm thinking of. One Wave of Vitriol, and you're done. I'm looking at this. My Riku deck runs 38 lands, and exactly 9 of them are basic lands.
Well, because of this next card, listener Pete started running more basic lands in his Riku deck, which is Boundless Realms.
Yeah, that's good.
A card that we've spoken about in various contexts before. So it's 7 mana in total, 6 and a green for a sorcery. Search your library for up to X basic land cards, where X is the number of lands you control, and put them onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle your library. That is pretty phenomenal ramp at any point you can cast it. And if you duplicate that, you could basically say is take every basic land out of your deck and put it onto the battlefield tap.
Yeah, this is another card I look at, I'm like, I gotta play more of it, because when it hits, and I've only seen it actually hit once, and that was with Pete.
Pete using it, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was in his Reese deck.
Yeah.
My question really is, do I want to spend 7 mana doubling my basic lands?
Yes, you do. Because you'd spend 6 mana to put in a mana reflection.
Which works with all lands as opposed to just basic lands.
Yeah, but then it comes down to perhaps your meta is very light on the Blood Moons and the Wave of Vitriols and the, is it, Path of Progress is a red spell that does 2 damage for each non-basic.
Yeah.
Which means you're very lucky, because a lot of metas aren't like that.
Yeah, but even in our playtest group, we're kind of light on those cards. And when they strike, yeah, it's bad, but they don't strike very often. And so that's the question I have. Like, I'm looking at my Riku deck with 9 cards. When I can cast this, 9 basic land cards, when I can cast this, yeah, I'll deplete the basic lands from my deck, but I may not even get all X. And I don't know. I'm just having trouble with it. And now, if you're early game and you have a lot of artifacts to help ramp into this.
Or you've cast a couple of cultivates.
But then the cultivates have worked against this.
I think, right. So if you're running 10 basic lands in your deck, which is not an unreasonable amount of basic land to run.
It's high.
You think in a
three color deck, that's a high number of basic lands. Yeah, and I mean, unless you're specifically gunning for non basic lands, and so
a lot
you
people,
don't carry as many non basics.
A lot of people do. It's a good strategy against any three color deck. Going for non basic lands is a really strong play if you're in the colors that can do it. Simply because you can. There are whole decks that you can just shut down just by going. Well, you know, you made the choice not to run any basics and to pour all your resources into non-basic land. You know, you can live by the sword, die by the sword, which in my opinion is different to like normal mass land destruction, because mass land destruction that hits every land shuts everyone off, whereas this is punishing people for choices they've made in their deck, and I need land to cost spells is not a choice you've made. You have to do that to play the game, unless you're playing Dredge.
Right. So look at it this way. Let me ask you a question, and this is a... I have an answer for this, but the first four lands in my Riku deck are Breeding Pool, Cavern of Souls. I pulled three of those. One was a foil. I got lucky. Desolate Lighthouse and Flamekin Village. Now, we know what Breeding Pool, Cavern, and Flamekin Village do, right? The Flamekin gives for our listeners, it gives a creature haste.
Yeah.
Desolate Lighthouse, you tap it for one colorless to your mana pool, and then for one a blue and a red, you loot.
Yeah.
You draw a card, then discard a card. I could conceivably cut that Desolate Lighthouse for a basic, but I would need to have enough cards to really take advantage of Boundless Realms, or to be immune to a Wave of Vitriol, or not immune to, but you understand, be able to recover from it. I would need to cut another one of those. So which do I cut? The Flamekin, the Breeding Pool, or the Cavern of Souls? And that doesn't even include, like, I haven't gone the next, and then this forest. Then the next ones are, you know, Frontier Bivouac, Ghost Quarter, Gruul Turf, Halimar Depths, Hall of the Bandit.
I would
right?
cut the Halimar Depths.
Maybe, but if you're interested in manipulating the top of your deck, you wouldn't.
Yeah, but you're drawing a load of cards anyway.
Well, again, Melek and to some extent the others actually care about.
Yeah, but this is a Riku deck because Melek isn't going to be running Boundless Realms.
Yeah, so again, you could cut that. Now we're up to 11 basic lands. Are we at the point where Boundless Realms works?
Yeah, I think you are.
Is worth it?
Yeah, absolutely. Because even if you're not copying it, you're stripping out a ton of cards from your deck, plus ramping the crap for the rest of the game. You have no concerns about casting any other spells and having the mana to duplicate them. If Riku gets stripped out of the game a couple of times, you're going to have the mana to recast him. I think you're spoilt because of the amount of green you play. I genuinely do. I think you don't appreciate just how powerful mana ramp is.
Well, yeah, but in this case, we're talking about a green card anyway.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But that is a super good... Like, the next card that's on our list here, which is Animist's Awakening, is nothing compared to Boundless Realms. Like, it is a poor cousin, at best, of it. And Boundless Realms...
Although land cards.
Yeah, but it's X off the top of your library, so you're going to whiff on a lot of them. I just think that ability to, unless you're playing Wooburg, where you legitimately have no real reason to ever play basic lands, because otherwise you're going to never be able to do what you want to do. In a three-color deck or less that's running green, I think Boundless Realms is a seriously legitimate card that will put you over the edge and just say, you're not quite omnipotence levels, because obviously you can't cast stuff for free, but you got no worries about what you want to cast in your turn for a remainder of the game. And I would say if you're running 10 basic lands, Boundless Realms is fine. It also smooths out your deck. Like, if you cast a Cultivate and a Kadama's Reach, that's 6 mana in total, and you're getting, over the course of four land, that's 6 mana, and you're just getting 4 basic land. You'll run both of them in a deck, won't you? Now, I know it's different because you play them earlier on, but...
Absolutely. You play them when ramp is most important.
But you go ramp, 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 strip all it out, and all you've got is a stack of spells, and you're ready to go. I agree it's better in a two or one-color deck than it is a three-color deck. 100% agree with that. Because you...
When you're looking at 20 basic lands, Boundless Realms is quite good.
I still think it has a place in Riku. It's in Maelstrom Wanderer, and Maelstrom Wanderer is in the same colours, because if I cascade into it, I can kill the Maelstrom Wanderer and recast him with the lands I've just pulled off the Boundless Realms.
Well, that's the thing. In the case of Maelstrom Wanderer, you're trying not to cast the spell by spending mana on it.
That's true. I'm still spending 8 mana to cast my Maelstrom Wanderer, though.
Yeah. But then you get Boundless Realms for free? Cry me a river. I would do this for free.
Cascade, Avengers Endercar, Cascade 2, Boundless Realms.
Well, yeah, so you look at it as this is occupying the same slot basically as Avenger of Zendikar.
Maybe.
And I'd rather have Avenger of Zendikar doubled than this doubled.
I don't think it is activating the same slot, is it?
It's 7 mana.
Do you build on curve like that? Because that's how standard and limited players build decks.
No, but that's something to consider. Like when I'm talking about slot in this case, I'm talking about impact on the game, right? So you cast Boundless Realms. Even if you double it, you're probably in a Riku deck not going to get enough basic lands to actually get to X on both of those castings, right? Both of those copies of the spell. So at 7 mana,
I don't think you need
to
double this one, but I do think it still makes the rest of your deck. You're always going to copy. So.
Oh yeah, but I think you've got the mana you need by the time you get to 7 or 9 mana. So if you get to 9 mana and you're doubling either Boundless Realms or Avenger of Zendikar, which one do you want to double? And I think the answer is Avenger of Zendikar. Now I'm not saying, you know, if you're at 99 cards and just like, oh, what do I do? But then obviously you play Boundless Realms, right? But I think there's a bigger impact. You look at Market Festival, even Market Festival. Early on, it's mana ramp when it counts. Because the question is, do you want to take a turn off to get Boundless, all of your basic lands out of your deck?
The Riku deck has a lot of good mana sink spells in it, the X spells. So I slightly refute your it's mana ramp when it counts, because Riku is a deck that cares about having a lot of mana later game. I know there are a lot of decks that don't.
A specific type of Riku deck cares about that.
Yeah.
But
so
if you look at.
It's not necessarily going to be in every Riku deck, but I think it is a very legitimate consideration for it. And if it certainly should be in a Walk the Raid Mother deck, which is 2 colors anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously it wants to go in a Melek deck, but oh, hang on.
And then Animus Awakening, we sort of alluded to. You know, you look at this at the time you're likely to cast it, turn 6 or turn 7, you're doubling it, so that's 2 off the top, 1 in a green, so you're looking at the top 4 cards of your library twice, and pulling all the lands into play. It's all right.
Well, what if it wasn't just the lands that came into play?
Well, maybe it was 3 green in its casting cost as well.
Well, now, if it were more than just the lands, that would be pretty sweet, wouldn't it?
Maybe just all permanents?
Yeah, let's say.
They wouldn't print that card, though, would they?
No, of course not.
Genesis Wave for X, green, green, green sorcery. Reveal the top X cards of your library. You may put any number of permanent cards with converted mana cost X or less from among them onto the battlefield. Then put all cards revealed this way that weren't put onto the battlefield into your graveyard. So are Riku and Wart the Raid Mother going to have too many instants and sorceries to want Genesis Wave?
Yeah, probably not, huh?
So if it's the creature Riku, the clone creatures, you do it then, don't you?
Yeah, Wart is more likely to have a reliance on instants and sorceries than Riku. And in any sort of I know we're talking about big mana, but in terms of mana production, like this is the kind of card you play the turn after you play Boundless Realms.
Oh, yes, it is.
And then you're quote unquote only getting 14 cards.
Only.
Yeah.
What's the most you've Genesis waved for? I've managed a 42.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it was a Crucifix deck, so I was cheating slightly.
Yeah. And now it's going to be hard to reach 42, isn't it?
Yeah, because I'm not going
harder,
to be
tapping slightly.
All my lands every turn.
Oh.
Bye-bye, Prophet Akrupi.
Moment of silence.
I can't help but feel we paid for her hit, and now we're crying that she's dead.
So we're only crying from the perspective of the player of Prophet. But my goodness, it's such a good thing she's gone. Ding dong, the witch is dead.
Just a quick metaphorical drink to all the players of Commander who are listening right now that over the last few weeks have had to have sat down with all their decks and sadly go through stripping the Prophet of Crucifixes out.
Yep. Here's I'm gonna sip one for the homies.
Yeah, let me just hang on. I see you at the crossroads. I see you at the crossroads. See you at the crossroads. Hey, there's no outside of Riku, there's no way of drawing cards with these commanders, is there, though?
Huh.
Sure there is.
Oh yeah. How does Wart draw? Yeah. How does Wart draw cards and things?
Well, she could cast Harmonize for 2 and green green sorcery, draw 3 cards. Or how about I draw 6 cards instead?
When Planar Chaos came out, did Rosewater just run around the WotC offices with a meat cleaver hacking limbs off people?
No, I think he was in part responsible for it.
Yeah, he just said, right, get all your crazy color pie wet dreams out of your system. You get this one time to do it.
Harmonize is very efficient with Riku because it goes down to 1 mana per card. That's just fantastic.
Yes. It's in the only criticism of that would be you're in blue, so there's other things you can do. But
even blue is hard pressed to reach 1 mana per card.
I'm thinking divination.
Well, if it's Wart the Raid Mother playing Mana Morphos for 1 and a hybrid red green, you add 2 mana in any combination of colors to your mana pool and you draw a card. So that's 0 mana to draw a card. And if you tap 2 goblins, you draw 2 cards.
Get
2 extra mana.
Well, beautiful.
That's probably the most efficient card draw in the game at that point, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
0 mana for 2 cards.
And 2 mana.
That's Skull Clampy.
Yeah, it's right in the realms of Skull Clamp. I'll try to think what's better than that. Skull Clamp whilst you've got a Grave Pact on the table. That's about it.
We have covered our big mana 3 generals pretty exhaustively. Anybody still listening? Kudos. You have survived the endurance portion of today's event.
And people who want to listen to more arguing between me and Phil about Boundless Realms and whether green or Phyrexia is worse for the game of Magic, tune in next week.
Tune in every week.
Tune in every week, exactly. So, Nate, you have a message of the week, don't you?
Yeah, this card here, I like it in Wart the Raid Mother. It goes well. It goes well in Krenko, too. Burn at the Stake. 2 red, red, red. It's a sorcery. As an additional cost to cast Burn at the Stake, tap any number of untapped creatures you control. Burn at the Stake deals damage to target creature or player equal to 3 times the number of creatures tapped this way. So if it's Wart the Raid Mother and you have 2 extra goblins, you can kill 2 players.
Oh my goodness.
God. Horrendous.
That's kind of ugly, Nate. Why would you play something like that? Do you just not like people?
It wins.
It's well established he doesn't like people.
Oh, and then you... What I really like about this is you can combine it with Volcanic Vision, retrieve it, wipe your opponent's creatures, and do it again!
Yes.
Oh, my word. All right, so that's fantastic. And, of course, we're going to cover that in our big tokens. You probably already said that while I was reeling with the...
Big tokens.
...implications. And, as always, we have the default message of the week.
Boop.
Modern.
Does this conclude our big mana series? Is this all the big mana series done?
No! There's more. There's going to be one about mono blue artifact cheaters.
Oh, yeah, Arkham and those people.
There's going to be one about dragon cheaters.
That's my ex-girlfriend. Buttum tish.
And there's going to be one about weirdos like Inted and Joyra.
Yeah, Joyra.
Oh, yeah, those are good ones.
Good old Joyra.
All right, listeners. Thank you for making it through this episode, and thank you for listening. We love hearing from you. We love playtesting decks with you. So please reach out to us. Let us know what you think of the show, and ask us how to playtest decks with us. That'll be great. Don't forget the newly launched Patreon page. If you really like the show, think about spending, and don't spend a lot. Spend less than a cup of coffee. And I don't even mean a Starbucks cup of coffee. you might go to one of those roach coaches for your morning coffees. If you're one of those people who kind of goes to one of those very shiny metal trucks in the morning and buys a coffee and you're not afraid to pick out insect legs, that's like $1.15, $1.30 for a cup of coffee. Just give us a buck. It's fine. To quote Dan Carlin, who makes podcasts you should be listening to, a buck a show would help a tremendous amount. That'll help us improve the quality. Maybe you can hear a little bit of humming every once in a while. We're looking to replace equipment and overall bring you a better show. And, oh, hey, we haven't talked about this at all, guys, but let's do this too. So our listeners are hearing this. And if you guys reject this outright, we will edit this whole thing from the podcast. We are going to, the next time we record a show after this has been released, we are going to award packs of Oath of the Gatewatch to listeners who've left us a 5-star review.
Sounds good to me.
Now, that's not every listener. We're going to randomly select a few, and I think what we'll end up doing is select like 5 listeners, and then we will send packs of Oath of the Gatewatch to those listeners. So get in there now, leave 5-star reviews, and maybe you'll be the lucky recipient of, I don't know, what's a good card from Oath of the Gatewatch?
Ooh, Eldrazi Displacer.
Oh, it is. Blinky the Eldrazi.
Mm. Thought Not Seer.
Mm. Endbringer.
Kalitas.
Yeah. Oh, Kalitas. There are quite a few, aren't there? So leave us a 5-star review, and maybe, just maybe, you'll get one of those cards from us. Our theme song was created for the podcast by Nate Burgess. Our logo was created for the podcast by MrPicto.co.uk, or by Mr. Picto. That's where you can find him, with assistance from Kelly. Special thanks to Tech Wiz's Jesse Thompson and Graham Frank, and to Justin for his server space. You can reach us by going to our website, which is, surprise, CommanderInMTG.com. Our email is cast@CommanderInMTG.com. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, MTGcast, Reddit, and several other social media sites by searching for CommanderInMTG Podcast. Individually, on Twitter, I'm @Ketchak.
I am @Copain26.
I'm @MrPlorg, Mr. Plorg.
Sean, we don't have a guest this time.
We don't. So in honor of our Swedish listeners, I've put this through Google Translate for you. Och bina vasho.
I think you just told them to kill themselves. Yeah! And if you didn't, your pronunciation will drive them to do it.
Well, I was going to make a really inappropriate joke then, but it was a Norwegian joke, and I realized that wouldn't have worked. I was going to say, you haven't seen Swedish. They just holds down the boot button for an hour.
Commander in After Dark.